Welcome to episode 5 of Seagull Eagle, the podcast where Brighton and Palace fans come together to laugh through the pain and occasionally celebrate a draw like it's a trophy. So what happened this week? Brighton earned a dramatic point against Newcastle in a game that did no favours for either side, with VAR getting more involved than a parent at a sports day. Palace, well, they drew with Nottingham Forest. They had more shots than a messy night out and just as much regret the next morning. But with two draws to discuss, don't be fooled. There's plenty to talk about, shout about and probably overreact to. So here we are back in the studio again, wondering if we're building towards a big finish or just mentally preparing for another what could have been end to the season. Thanks for tuning in. Follow us on socials for bonus meltdowns, bold claims and general football nonsense. Let's get into it before VAR intervenes again.
Hello, Andy.
Hi, Neil. Have you had a good week?
Yeah, it's not been too bad, although my voice is a bit worse for wear this today.
Yeah, what's happened, mate?
Oh, I've had a bit of a cold, so I'm struggling through like a brave man that I am.
Bless you. Well, don't you worry, because I'm sure this pub will cheer you up, because I feel like things are starting to look a bit better for you guys. Have you been up to anything good this week?
Well, it's been a bank holiday, obviously, so extra day off work, that's always useful, isn't it?
Nice.
Are you still decorating?
Still decorating. Still listening to the radio while I'm decorating. However, something exciting did happen today.
Go on.
Well, I bought my Wembley tickets, didn't I?
Oh.
For the final.
Great.
Yep. Although they have doubled in price.
Doubled in price, what, since the semi-final?
Yeah.
Well, they got you now, haven't they?
There's been absolute uproar online about it. But yeah, they've doubled in price. So we've gone from a nice padded seat up at the top to a seat with the crowd down the bottom, which actually I think I'm going to prefer.
Yeah.
Get a bit of a better atmosphere.
Should we talk about the games?
I think we should. Should we start with yours?
Yeah, let's do that, actually. So yeah, Sunday, Albion 1, Newcastle 1. What even to start with? Well, I'll tell you what, actually, let's start with before the game.
Mm.
On our way, I drive in and park, get some parking near the ground. And on our way on the A27, the main sort of carriageway motorway to the ground, we came across a Newcastle supporters coach that had broken down just about probably, what, a mile and a half to the stadium. So they'd made it all the way from Newcastle and then broke down just as they got to the finishing post. Apparently the tyre had smashed out and so what we'd ended up with was a queue of traffic as the coach, as it was roadworks on the A27 anyway, stuck on this single lane on the verge with all these Newcastle fans getting out and walking on the A27.
No way.
Yeah, to the stadium.
And so, I bet not a single Brighton fan offered them a lift.
Well, it's funny you say that, Andy.
You didn't.
I bloody did.
Did you?
Yeah, so these three chaps, they told me on their way there that they'd been coming down to the Albion since the Goldstone ground. We had a little chat in the car, picked them up on the road, and about literally 10 minutes later, they were at the stadium anyway. So they made it in time. I'm not sure about everyone in that coach, but at least I did my bit. And also the good news is that when I'm next up in Newcastle, if I go to the Three Bulls Head pub in Haymarket, there's a pint there waiting for me. So that's good news, isn't it?
I mean, if you want to spend 200 quid getting there, you can get a £3 pint for free. Yeah.
Well, all right. Just making a point.
No, that's lovely of them, isn't it? You've made some friends. I'm happy for you.
It's nice. And I'm sure they had a nice day out eventually.
Yeah.
So, the game. The lineup was a little bit of a puzzle, Andy. And I'll tell you for why.
Okay.
Thursday, press conference, Fabian Hursler gave us some great news. He told us that literally everyone that we were expecting to be fit was fit.
No way.
So, Van Hecker was back. Matoma, who limped off a little bit in the previous game, was absolutely fine.
Yeah.
We had people coming back from injury in Webster, Igor. We obviously knew that Veltman and Lamptey were fit. So suddenly we were having...
We got a defence back as
exactly.
well.
Exactly. It was like Christmas all come at once. It was amazing.
Ooh.
So I was very happy going into Sunday. When the lineup was announced, I was expecting certain people in the lineup. Well, only one of them was in the lineup. That was Van Hecke returning from his head injury. Whereas there was still no right back on the pitch. Veltman and Lamptey, yes, both right backs that were fit, were on the bench. Head scratch number one. Head scratch number two, no Karo Mitoma at all. So he was fit Thursday. By Sunday, he's picked up an ankle injury. So that was gutting straight away. I move on, but the frustration straight away of seeing those players on the bench and seeing some players completely disappear off the starting 11 or the bench was a little bit of a problem from my point of view. And we've had that a few times this season where Fabian Hoesler has said one thing in a press conference about players being fit. And now, look, granted, things can happen in between a press conference on a Thursday and a game on a Sunday. I understand that. But it was a little bit confusing.
Maybe it's a double bluff.
Well, you never know. Exactly. Those sort of things do happen. But it's just a bit of a frustration. You know, you go in expecting a certain type of lineup. If we had had our full back four, we'd had Mitoma on the pitch. There's a different vibe, there's a different feel going into that when you feel like you've got a proper first 11 on the pitch. Anyway, I digress. Point being that it put me in a little bit of a bad spot straight away. And I was already, if you remember when we talked about the predictions, I was already thinking to myself before this that we probably weren't going to get anything out of the game. Newcastle were coming into this pretty good form. We'd been very sketchy at best. So the lineup should have been obvious, but it wasn't, as I said. And then game starts, and I was quite happy to see that Joe Linton was injured. He's turned out to be a fantastic midfielder. So the fact that he was actually injured and not playing was a good start from my point of view. They brought in Willock, who did his bit for the game later on. And I just thought the game started very cagey. Both teams were, although Brighton were the home team, they didn't particularly go all hell for leather, start attack too much, but they certainly had the best of the ball for the first 20 minutes, I would say. Newcastle were very much of the counter-attacking style, just trying to soak it up for a little while and see what was happening. It didn't really have much life to the game. There was a few little things here and there, but not much really happened until it broke into life at about probably 28 minutes, and that was the first goal of the match. Yankuba Minter, as you probably remember seeing it, got a pass from Weaver after we'd had a bit of a few passes around the box. He cut in from that right side onto his left foot into the penalty box, gave a couple of little shimmies, and then curled it round the defenders straight into the bottom corner. It was a really good finish, actually. It puts us into the driving seat at that point. And I was surprised. I was expecting Newcastle to come right out. But no, we go one up, great solo effort, you know, and as I say, puts us in the driving seat.
I was surprised, actually. I really was. And what else was interesting, actually? I'm sure you did see it. Did you see a celebration?
Yeah.
Because I've got a few questions about that.
Yeah, I'm sure you have. There's a lot of people have. I saw it all over social media as well. And I don't think his... when he got interviewed afterwards, I don't think he really explained what the issue was. Look, I've got my own view of what it was about. Okay. Do you want me to tell you?
I'd love to, Neil.
So let's cast our mind back to what happened with Yankuba Minter generally over the last year. It was a strange one, but you have to remember he was signed from Newcastle in the summer transfer window. He'd been on loan, although he was a Newcastle player, he'd been on loan in the Netherlands that whole season before for Feyenoord. He'd had a really good season, by the way, hence why people were looking at him. But he was a Newcastle player, but he'd never actually had the opportunity to play for the Magpies at all. So it goes into the summer transfer window, and the rumours were that due to profit and sustainability, Newcastle had to sell players, obviously. I think we knew that at the time. There was a lot of talk about it. And Minter was the one that they picked, or one of the ones that they picked. So Brighton swooped in. Get it? Swooped.
Very good.
Thank you. Brighton swooped in and got him at, not cheap, but they got him at a good price. And if you remember then, he played for us, and at the FA Cup game in March, when we went up there and played, he scored the first goal for Brighton. He didn't celebrate. So he simply stood in front of the crowd, put his hands together like a sort of a praying and an apologetic sort of way, showed respect and
graceful.
Said, yeah, exactly. It's like a lot of players do.
As you should probably when you go to maybe to your old club.
Exactly. It was very soon after he'd moved. So I could understand that. Fast forward to this weekend and he scores again and starts at least to repeat the same celebration. But from where I sit, you could see that some of the Newcastle fans, when he stood there, started throwing their arms up and shouting at him, you know, sort of essentially sort of not accepting that non-celebration as such. They were obviously agitated. I mean, it was the second time he'd scored against them, in two games. So I can understand why they were frustrated, but still, he wasn't necessarily trying to be disrespectful or anything. He just scored a goal.
He did stand in front of them, though.
He did, but he'd scored and was there facing them. So he started the I apologise sort of way of celebrating or non-celebration. But he clearly see these fans that are annoyed at him, so he clearly then gets annoyed. At which point he starts gesturing that they can't have him now, that he's now a Brighton fan, you know, starts pointing at the Brighton team and the Brighton fans, and then starts, I think he's like pointing at the Albion badge on the shirt as well. And he gets pulled away by the other players, or the more senior players, I would say, because Welbeck and Dunk both trying to pull him away, as well as Weaver. And to be honest, you know, for the rest of that game, he had a chip on his shoulder, but actually in a good way. It really fired him up, and he was absolutely excellent for the whole game. Really, really strong and you know, worked so hard for the team. But it was pretty strange. But I honestly think, in my opinion, he wouldn't have done what he'd done if he'd not seen the fans doing the things that they were doing.
Yeah, I don't know how else he expected that to go, though, because any fans who are watching a player from the opposite team celebrate in front of them,
yeah,
it's never going to go well. Never going to go well. And I think he will probably look back at that, just as we all do in our own lives sometimes, and go, why did I do that?
Yeah, he's a young lad. I mean, he's literally just turned 20. Like, yeah, you know, it's a long career, hopefully, for him. And with a bit of luck, that's over and done with now and he moves on. But yeah, certainly at the time, it was a little fiery. And it in some respects, though, it made the game come alive a little bit, because everybody got a little bit agitated one way or the other about that.
It's a difficult one, isn't it? I don't think he'll be going to that pub in Newcastle to have a drink anytime soon.
I'll invite him, but we'll see. Anyway, look, after a few minutes of that, the game restarts. And although there were a few moments from both teams, we do get to half-time, one up. And if I'm honest, I'm very happy. We didn't really create too much more, but nor did Newcastle at that point.
So at the halfway mark, you're 1-0 up and you think you deserve to be 1-0
up. No. I don't think we deserve it. I think we're a little lucky.
Okay.
I don't think there was much in it, but I think 0-0 would have been fair. I think 1-0 either way probably would have been fair in that sense.
Yeah.
Anyway, second half comes and Newcastle have obviously and clearly stepped it up a notch. They come out and Brighton have got the pressure put on them straight away, really. Their levels have gone up. Albion's, as it always seems to after the second half, didn't really get a look in. You know, they were pegged back for quite a lot of that game. They had the odd chance here and there, but essentially Newcastle created a lot more chances. Albion did well to keep them out. It was a very different performance from Brighton in that respect. And although the ref was determined to make sure that not Newcastle score somehow.
Oh, really?
I'm not saying he was anything but doing his job. Of course, referees have a hard job. But it did seem as if Mr. Paulson was very, very excited about the possibility of giving Newcastle a penalty. There were so many sort of things happening through the game where everything just felt a little bit uneven, let's say, put it that way, with certain decisions. But there were three big moments in the second half, and I'm sure everyone's seen them. All of them caused by the ref, though, really. So firstly, the ref gives a penalty for a foul by the newly entered onto the pitch, Tarek Lamptey, who hadn't actually even touched the ball at that point. he came on for maybe a minute, 2 minutes before, but then gave the foul on Anthony Gordon. But it was clearly outside the box. I say clearly, it was close, don't get me wrong, it was close. But most people looking at it straight away went, that doesn't look inside the box, even from a first glance. Penalty straight away, ref said. VAR look at it, quite rightly overrule it and say, no, it's outside the box. So that's fine, we've done. One mistake, you're allowed a mistake. That's fine. Then on 70 minutes, the one that really gets me, Joe Willock does his best Superman impression and throws himself to the ground with the ref again was only too pleased to point to the spot. I mean, I don't even think Willock had landed and the ref was blowing his whistle, telling everyone it was a penalty. You know, looking at the replay, you could understand why Van Hek, when that whistle blew, went absolutely mental for a minute. He was apoplectic. He really was.
Right.
He was so shocked and annoyed by the ref's decision. There was clearly no contact. I mean, there was actual daylight between the two.
Mm.
And that's the problem I have with these sorts of things. It's like, I'm getting worried that referees are starting to rely on VAR.
Mm.
You know, it's a frustration that we're getting very close to these sort of moments where referees are letting go of their decisions. I just felt like the referee was just so eager. Sorry, you carry on.
No, not at all. Because as you say, VAR can look at stuff afterwards, even if the ref doesn't call it, right? And they'll still talk in his ear. But if they do it that way round, it doesn't look good on the ref, because that points out the fact that he's missed it. Whereas if he calls it and it isn't, and then he gets overruled...
Isn't that the same thing? He's missed a blatant dive by Willock?
Well, I don't know. I don't know whether, from a referee's point of view, is it not better to call it and you might be right, as opposed to being called out for something you missed? I don't know. I think it's one of them. It's a tricky job being a ref, isn't it? And, you know, for someone like me watching that game, I mean, look, what all that is some headlines, you know, two VAR calls that didn't quite come off or whatever. For a Brighton fan, it's... Well, you're on the right side of it. From a Newcastle fan, they're livid. And the ref's done an awful job. Whatever it is, you can't win, can you?
But... No, absolutely. I do understand that. And I am looking at this in a very biased way. I appreciate that.
As I do weekly on this podcast.
Well, that's fair. That's a very fair comment. Mm. So at this point...
Yes.
Oh, by the way, Willock did eventually get a yellow card for diving.
Oh, yeah,
sorry, simulation.
He got one for simulation?
Yes.
Good. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Anyway, at this point... Both penalties not reversed, is the right word? Reversed decision? Yeah, I think so.
We'll go with that.
Yeah, both decisions were reversed, no penalties. And at this point, I'm starting to think that maybe luck is on our side. We've got all this way, all this pressure from Newcastle, but actually we've managed to keep them out. And we've managed to keep Alexander Isak, incredibly quiet through the whole game. The two central defenders have done a really good job at that point. No, I said at that point.
Mm.
But look, he was actually quiet. When you look at it across the whole of the game, he personally didn't get a look in.
No, you're right.
I appreciate there's a penalty coming, but unfortunately we can't tackle him when he's taken a penalty. But generally speaking, we've done really well to keep him quiet. Even though the ref was awarding penalties like a traffic warden on commission, we were still in front. It was not to be. We know what happened. It gets to the 85th minute. We concede a free kick on the edge of the box, which in itself was a little bit annoying. They take that free kick. It hits Yassin Ayari's hand. And it shouldn't be there, his hand. It shouldn't be where it was. And so it's a penalty. Everybody knows that's going to be a penalty. It's very straightforward. It still takes 2.5-3 minutes for VAR to make that decision. How? I don't know. But it was a penalty. Isak pops up, scores the penalty. It's 1-1. And realistically, Newcastle deserved a point minimum. Mm. You know, you look at the stats overall, they deserved a point. Brighton came to life a little bit after that with the last sort of 10 minutes of the game. You know, we had one big chance with a free kick from Gruder, curled it in, and Gomez put a head just wide of the post. He should have got it on target. That was the only really big chance that Brighton created, mostly in the whole second half, really. So, as I say, ends 1-1. And to be honest, if it wasn't right at the end of the season, I think we both would be happy with that point and we'd move on, both Newcastle and Brighton. But as you said in your intro, it does leave us both a little bit, you know, we both wanted the win.
No one's won anything, have they?
Well, no, exactly.
If anything, you just harmed each other's hopes.
But... I've tried to keep positive because I looked at it in two things, really, in particular. One... As I said to you right at the beginning of all of this, I wasn't expecting anything from this game. So to get a point out of this game, I'm quite happy, really, in the bigger picture.
Yeah.
Second of all, though, I do want to call out one thing. The level of performance for that game was very, very good. Now, don't get me wrong, not on an attacking perspective, but the team cohesion, the way we defended, the level of work that every player on that pitch got through... was so good, in my opinion, compared to previous weeks. that level of performance was still excellent. So when you think of the sort of the up and down nature of our season so far, we've had little moments where we've played so well for 3-4 games, let's say, and then we've had dips where we've played really bad for 4-5 games, etc. Most recently, against West Ham last week, we played really well. We just couldn't find the end result until right at the end of the game. This week, again, I think we've actually played really well. Again, not attacking-wise, but the rest of it, the performance, the defensiveness, everything, the hard work, and just working together as a team. I actually thought it was a really good performance. Mm-hmm. And I'm hopeful that we can keep on this level of performance, because if we work hard like that, we may have a chance still for Europe. It's dwindling, but we may still have a chance.
Sorry, Neil, I'm just trying to keep a straight face when you said that.
Yeah, yeah.
So look, do you remember on last week's podcast, we spoke about a potential record that could be set this week in your game. And I kind of alluded to the fact that Isak might break Alan Shearer's record. And you helped him to that, didn't you?
I'm not sure we helped him, Andy. Well, I don't think that's a fair comment. Look, we can't keep someone from taking a penalty. I think Mr. Paulson, the referee, was so eager for that record to be broken this weekend. He tried 3 times to give them a penalty. Only one of them was an actual penalty.
And I think your defensive statement there about how well you defended as well is interesting, because if you look at the stats, like, Newcastle definitely had the better of the stats in terms of attacking.
Absolutely.
Right? Five shots to 2 on target, 13 shots to 5 off target, as it were, 422 passes to 379, which backs up your statement, which is that, yes, they had the better attacking options. However, you stood firm under reasonable resolve there, by the look of it.
It was very interesting, because I think most of that was tactical. A lot of people will say, oh no, Newcastle were just better. I don't actually think that. It's very rare that a team comes to the Amex and has more possession than us.
Of course, yeah.
And we ended up with 45% possession. We consciously decided that we were going to soak up that pressure and try to, I think, probably get away with a draw. But when we went one up, well, you know, we might get away with a 1-0 here. And this was exactly the same result, exactly the same type of performance that it was up in St James's in the league, where we scored one goal and they had 1,000 chances and didn't score. So it was a very similar way of the game went in that sense, the only difference being that they got that last minute penalty.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I did think that you would get something out of this, but where our opinions differ, and this is not me being a Palace fan talking to a Brighton fan, this is just me looking at your season going forward now, I'm worried for you now. I really am. And I'm not being an idiot. Like, genuinely, when I look at the fixtures and I look at who you've got coming up, I think, I actually feel like that might be your last point.
You think that might be our last point? Seriously, mate. Turn it in.
No, let's just see. I haven't been far off, actually, with my Brighton predictions.
No, you haven't,
so
annoyingly.
Far.
Annoyingly.
I think I did actually say 1-0. But
no, I understand what you're saying. And realistically, we've got 3 games left. One of those, I think, is a good 3 points because it's Spurs. But the other two, I agree, Wolves and Liverpool. You know, I haven't got a clue what's going to go on. We can talk about those later, though, because you know, we can talk about the other results around the
mid. I guess I didn't want you to move on without enjoying that point. Do you know what I mean? Because it could be the last one you have for a while.
Oh, let's just move on, shall we?
I prefer not to speak. If I speak, I will be in trouble.
Talking about points, Crystal Palace 1, Nottingham Forest 1. This pod's being recorded on a Tuesday. We normally do it on a Monday, but obviously I was up in Selhurst Park very late last night, later than we should have been, to be brutally honest.
Yeah, there was a lot of added on at the end, wasn't there? A lot of shenanigans going on.
Oh, man. Honestly, do they not know it was a school night? Unbelievable. well, look, this game is a game that I like to call the one where we nearly won again. riding high after our Wembley wizardry against Villa. I'm trying not to refer to the FA Cup too much because I can feel the Brighton fans pressing stop
absolutely
on the podcast as we speak. Glasner named the same starting 11. So if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Here's a stat for you, Neil.
Go on.
We haven't beaten Forest in the top division since 1991. So long ago, Roy Hodgson was in his 50s.
Wow. He really is old, isn't he?
He's a very old man. So could this be the day? The short answer is no. But we did come close. Last week, we spoke about how both Palace and Forest play a very similar style and love the counter-attack. But obviously, you can only counter-attack if the other team's got possession.
Yeah, absolutely.
So obviously, you did bring that point up.
I did.
And the question was, how on earth would this work? Mm. How would two teams who play a very similar style go head-to-head? The answer, from my perspective, it led to a very strange first half. Both teams passing it round at the back, lots of central defenders making kind of surging forward, being brave and then changing their minds and passing it sideways. It was a bit of a battle of the wing-backs at times. I think Glasner did what he's done before, where he was setting Munoz and Mitchell very, very wide.
Yeah, yeah.
Very wide. Almost off the pitch, in fact. Hoping to drag the Forest fullbacks over, kind of to create that space in the middle for Eze and Sarr to move in.
Yeah, because Forest actually played a four, didn't they, against this? Which I thought was interesting, because I would have expected them to match up. That surprised me. So the idea of, you're quite right, Glasner putting those wing-backs really, really wide, theoretically, that's a good plan.
Yeah.
But Forest were having none of it, were they?
They weren't. They really weren't. And for 20 minutes, that first 20 minutes, I felt it was a bit flat.
Mm.
It was a bit flat. Both teams working out who actually wanted the ball, and then when they did get the ball, what to do with it. And I thought both teams looked a little bit, I don't know, nervy, maybe not the right word, but I feel like it was one of the ones where they've got the ball and then there just wasn't a direct route through. The wings were being kind of hotly contested. The middle was all long balls that were just defenders jumping higher than the other. It felt like no way through. However, there were a few early chances from Palace.
Yeah.
Lacroix, who had a superb game. I love that guy now. I really, really do. He hit the side netting. It was so close that I did jump up and celebrate. I think I was the only one. As I said to you before, I'm sat in the more reserved main stand where people read the newspaper before and after the game. And
wow,
if you stand up, yeah, if you stand up, you have to limit your standing for a celebration and leave it to the last minute. Just because you don't want to get, you know what I mean? Because there are people that maybe can't stand around you. I got a bit involved in that one. Looked a bit like an idiot, but I sat back down again very, very quickly. Munoz decided to test the Forest keeper with a back post volley, but no cigar. And then Forest countered with Elanga moving like Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest, I was shocked.
And
both me and Harry, I knew he was quick. But you see him in front of you, and it was like Sonic the Hedgehog. It was something else, how quick that man moves.
He is so quick.
Astonishing. With the ball at his feet as well. Thankfully, Henderson was well and truly up for the challenge on that one. And again, he had a superb game. And we'll explain why he let one in later on. Chris Wood, who throughout that game got himself into very, very good positions. You can see why he's been very successful this season, because his positioning is superb, and his communication and everything as to where he wants the ball and his movement is bang on. So as soon as that ball comes into that box, he's going to get it in. However, we didn't really give him much space in this game.
I think it's a fair point, though, to make a suggestion about Chris Wood. You know, he's had such a great season.
Mm.
The way that Nottingham Forest play, they've made sure that he is the linchpin in that attack.
Yeah.
They use his strengths, and literally, which is strength, one of them, plays it off to those two lightning wingers.
Yeah.
You know, normally that would be Hudson-Odoi. I know he's injured currently, but Hudson-Odoi and the aforementioned Elanga, the amount of counter-attacking they can get through because of that, it's worked an absolute dream for them. And you know, he's had a fantastic season. But sorry, I digress.
No, don't worry. Funny enough, you mentioned Hudson-Odoi.
Yeah.
He was there at the game. Did you see?
Yeah, he was in the away end, wasn't he, with the fans?
Yeah, yeah. He walked up and down, went to the changing rooms and everything before the game, and he walked all the way past us. And I was like, I said to my son, I was like, who's that? Couldn't quite work out who it was. And he was saying hello to everybody. I was like, I don't know. I thought it was like, is it Stormzy or someone like that? It felt like it was a real celebrity, do you know what I mean, on the pitch. And then you just saw him walk all the way around, and he kind of just went over and stood in the middle of the away fans. Nice. And just chanting away. I thought it was quite nice.
Well, I hope he had a ticket.
I hope he did. Anyway, look, Chris Wood wanted a penalty for what was essentially a mild cuddle from Munoz, which is true. There was nothing in it. But I really didn't, honestly, I didn't think it was at the time. I looked at the replay and it really wasn't. However, Wood was pushing himself into him to make it look like it was more.
Yeah.
VIR said no correctly on this occasion.
Yeah, I agree.
Then, so we get into half-time. The second half, this is where a little bit more of the fun happens. And I think kind of it goes from a bit more of a dull game of chess to a little bit more end-to-end football, and anything can happen. Because both teams were like, hang on a minute, this isn't going to work as a draw. Like, we both need something out of this.
Yeah.
So Tyrick Mitchell bursts into the box like a man possessed. And the keeper correctly took him out because that was the only option he had, to be brutally honest.
Yeah, it was... when I first saw it, I actually wasn't sure what had happened. Like, obviously, there was a clattering together.
Well, Mitchell just disappeared.
Well, yeah.
That's why. Everyone was like, where's he gone? Oh, he's there.
Yeah, very true, very true. I mean, I think it was a very clear penalty. I don't think there was any... I haven't heard anyone really arguing too much about it.
I don't know how you can. I really don't know how you can. I mean, the only argument would be that even if the keeper hadn't have taken him out, would he have got the ball? But that defeats the object anyway, because the ball was kind of running past him.
But the defender was trying to take him out as well.
There was two of them.
There was two of them. Yeah, anyway.
They were filthy nil. Honestly, I will talk about this in a bit.
Don't get me started. Yeah.
They were disgusting. But anyway, we'll get to that in a bit. So VAR did its thing, gave us a penalty. Everyone's happy. Everyone stood up, even in my section. All the old folk are up on their feet. We're waiting for this penalty to be taken. Eze, Mateta having a chat with each other. Who's going to take the penalty? You know my pain from previous weeks. We've talked about this.
I do. And when I saw who stepped up to take it, I was thinking of you. I was laughing, but I was thinking of you.
I bet you were. I was thinking to myself, could this be a repeat of the over-the-top, elaborate, ridiculous penalty taking that comes with Eze? And
the fake Panenka that was just
mate,
like... Yeah.
He couldn't possibly repeat that, could he? And then I'm thinking, oh, hang on a minute. But if Mateta takes it, he didn't do much better against Arsenal, did he? He kind of missed the goal altogether.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, which one of these two is going to right their wrongs? And of all the games, this would be a good one to do it. So, yes... Eze steps up. He did repeat the ridiculousness. However, this time he scored. Now, there's a little bit of controversy. I don't want to spend too long on this because I don't know, controversy is the word? Listening on the radio on the way home. Mm. Obviously, at an hour and a half journey.
Sure.
God knows what time last night to get home after this ridiculously long game. And they did a little bit of a phone-in on the radio. And one of the things they talked about was the penalty. And it was elaborate. And he did what can only be described as some kind of contemporary dance before he kicked the ball. It went in, which meant that it was genius, of course. If he'd missed it, it would have been ridiculous. However, the controversy was in this phone-in, mostly from the opposition. However, they were saying that, did he actually stop before he ran up? My feelings on this was, he didn't stop because it was a continuous motion. But what he actually did do was run backwards. He went forwards, backwards, forwards. So, yeah. And I know they were going through the rule book on the radio, working out whether they'd broken any rules. I don't think he did. What do you think, Neil?
I don't think he broke any rules, no. I think what you're finding, like any new way of taking penalties or any new thing in football, is that people try and find a way to bend the rules as much as possible. The rules are very clear. It's about when you start your run-up to take a penalty, you cannot stop. That's the only really wording in there that defines what a penalty should be doing. And there's been Eze is by far not the first player to do this. Lots of players do it. Mm. You know, there's the step, there's the... I mean, Pogba, he takes about 17 minutes to take a penalty, the way he makes his little steps and does little things as well. So it's not just about Eze. When you saw it, though, I do understand why people would be unhappy and questioning it, because it is probably taking that law... Yeah, it's probably getting to its absolute closest moment of breaking the law, because he does slow down a lot and he does sort of go backwards. He does, you know, he does lots of different things in that movement. But ultimately, if the referee, and now we have VAR as well, both agree that that is still okay, then that's okay. I think it's really harsh on the goalkeepers. I think it's getting more and more difficult to actually stop a goal now, because you're having to worry about what's happening with the player and how they're dancing around. But so be it. It's the world we live in now, mate.
Do you know what, though? An attacker out in essence in the box, and I mean obviously Mitchell went down, and that was a goal opportunity. So it doesn't matter how much Eze dances it taking that penalty, he deserves the opportunity, and he scored it well. And in this occasion, Eze's the hero. Anyway, 1-0 up Palace, all is going well. Selhurst Park chanting, "We're going to Wembley," rubbing it in the face of the Forest fans. Wharton then gets injured, which is a little bit of a problem. Just after the penalty, he takes quite a small knock. However, he's kind of like he's limping around. So he goes off, replaced by Will Hughes, who was actually, I think, quite a good shout bringing him on anyway, regardless of the injury, because he kind of roughs up the game a little bit. Forest were getting very, very physical at this point, very physical.
Yeah.
So I think bringing him on kind of helped it. It's like bringing the bouncer out from the back office. Do you know what I mean? When you bring Will Hughes on. So after the game, though, Glasner did say that Wharton only twisted his ankle. Like not a full twist, slight twist of the ankle. It was taken off as a precaution. You could see all the Palace fans' faces, because Wharton didn't just go and sit down behind Glasner. He walked all the way through and passed through the tunnel with the physio team, and everyone's like that. Oh no. And that's the risk. If you want to keep your momentum, you're risking the injury to the players, but you can't just leave them behind closed doors until the final, can you?
And also you can't do that, because if you don't play the players, they'll be out of sorts by the time the final comes along. So
of course they will. And then we move on to something that can only be described as ridiculous. A really, really silly, silly goal. After a wonder save, and I don't know if you saw this, I think it looked even better from the angle that we were sat, actually, than it did on telly, but a wonder save from Henderson from an Elanga shot. Somehow, Forest equalise with, as I said, a ridiculous goal. So Williams picks up the ball, shoots, and Murillo sticks out his leg to divert the ball mid-flow, and somehow it ends up at the back of the net. And Henderson obviously dives the way the ball should have gone.
Yeah, exactly.
And I mean, it almost looks comical, because Henderson is still going for the ball and doesn't even realise it's over that way.
Yeah.
And I felt really sorry for Henderson, because there was nothing, absolutely nothing, that was going to get past him apart from something as stupid as that.
Mm.
And we looked so good at the back up until that point. Like, even you could probably see that as a Brighton fan. You go, actually, there's not much going to get past them tonight. They do look solid. And then something as stupid as that. And even the manager said at the end, they were like, "I don't know if he meant to do that. I think he did. We don't really know. Do you think he meant to do it?"
He meant to stick his foot out. Absolutely. I don't think he knew where it was going to go, but I think he was making the decision that I'll try and get something on it. I think he meant to touch it. Whether he knew where it was going in the end of it is another matter.
And it's so frustrating. And to sit and watch that after all of that hard work and watching that boring first 20 minutes, and then it's like, I felt like we got the advantage, and it was like, oh, it felt quite deflating. This is where, in the stadium, I felt frustration.
Okay.
And the people around me felt frustration. Not because anyone did anything wrong or anything like that, but when I watched it back this morning, I saw a bit of a different game to the one that I watched last night. And it's weird, isn't it? When you're in the stands, you kind of pick up on the negatives a lot more, because you're surrounded by people giving you vibes, right?
Absolutely.
The people behind you, in front of you, whatever. Certainly, I didn't realise how good a game Eze had, actually, live when I watched it. I also didn't realise how well we actually played in that last 20 minutes until I watched it back. I was just so frustrated by the fact that I think the filthiness of Forest and how many cards that they were being shown was just ridiculous. Every time we got the ball in that last 20 minutes, they were pulling the player down.
Yeah.
It was like there was a level of fear from Forest that we cannot go on the attack. I felt they kind of felt a bit vulnerable. They did look a bit shaky. And they were like, if this goal goes in, our European dreams are over. We've got to keep a clean sheet by any methods. And that kind of felt like the mission.
They played that way, like when Albion hosted Forest at the Amex earlier in the season. I don't know if you remember, but both managers got sent off. Morgan Gibbs got sent off for a foul. It got a bit fiery, and for the same reason that we were trying to win the game and they were trying to stop us from winning the game for any way they could. So they've got it in them. You know, they've had a good season. There's going to be ways to win a game, and they've found quite a lot of different ways to win a game.
8 yellow cards, though. And every time there was a yellow card, I'm like, have they had one already? Surely this must be unbelievable. And there was a couple of moments where there should have been double yellows, actually. And I think they got away with that. They were lucky to end up with 11 on the pitch. Yeah. Anyway, Glasner brings on Eddie Nketiah to inject some chaos. It worked almost. It felt like Mateta's kind of been played out of the game, which was a real shame. He was looking keen at the start. And I think the centre-backs were just kind of smothering him out of it, really. Yeah. There just wasn't a route through for him. It felt like it was all being played on the wings. He couldn't really get the ball. So Nketiah comes on. Now, yes, it felt like a good plan. However, we still continued to play the long balls to Nketiah, who's a man that feels like he's shorter than my 10-year-old daughter. Although I don't think he is, but he just doesn't, he can't jump as high.
He looks like he's shrunk.
Yeah, I think he's 5'11". I don't think he's much shorter than me, actually, but he does look considerably shorter on the pitch.
He looks smaller in a Palace shirt than he did in an Arsenal shirt, and that might be metaphorically, but
well,
he definitely
his shoulders are somewhat lower, I think, at the moment. But yeah, it just wasn't working, the big long balls. However, Eze decides to casually curl one into the crossbar on the 88th minute. And did you see that, where he hit the crossbar?
It was a fantastic, well, almost a fantastic finish.
Ah, well, the keeper just watched it like the rest of us.
Yeah.
And it would have been superb. All that was missing was the bit where it hit the back of the net. It would have been goal of the season again. It was one of them ones where you're like, wow. And there were so many moments like that in this game. When you look at it, so many moments. Eze then sends a really, really good cross shot, I guess is probably the best way to describe it. And Nketiah taps it in. Selhurst erupts. Could it possibly be? Oh, no. Nketiah's offside again. And he was miles off.
He was miles off.
How the entire stadium, including me, missed the fact that he was that far offside, I've no idea. And how the hell did Nketiah decide to be that far offside again? I have no idea. But there we go. So, yes, the last 20 minutes turned into the last 35 minutes due to a Forest player hitting the deck with a nosebleed and taking 15 minutes to decide to get off the pitch. And it was just, I don't know, there was, as I said, there was the time wasting. And there was at one point where I wasn't sure if Forest were going for a Champions League spot or a Guinness World Record on the amount of fouls that they could possibly commit to stop us from scoring. As I said, 8 yellow cards, they were filthy, and it was just, it was disappointing, actually, in this day and age to see that level of what I actually used to see every week in the Championship when Palace were down there, that kind of roughery. And I know that, look, whatever means within the rules to win a football game, get it. Just really disappointing because I just felt like it wasn't in the nature of it. 1-1, it's what I thought would happen with the draw. I didn't think we'd get much more out of that. Forest looking like they're hit a stumbling block now. And Palace, with a realisation that we've got to win the FA Cup to get to Europe, I think now.
I think you're probably right on both points there. I think Forest looked tired.
They did.
They just looked like they've run out of steam a little bit and they're trying to drag themselves over that finish line. And they still might do that. And at the end of that, well, by the last sort of 10, 15 minutes, I think Palace probably edged it. They probably should have won.
Definitely should have.
You know, when you look at the quality of chance, I think their XG, let me have a look. Yeah, so their XG was 2.56. So over 2.5 XG is a lot, you know, in a game like that, compared to 0.71 for Forest, you know. So 20
shots.
Yeah,
I've 20 got to say shots. That. 20 yeah, shots
yeah,
on goal.
Yeah, exactly. So they, you know, they probably should have won it. But as you quite rightly point out, I think even if they had, they're still only 3 games to go, probably not going to get 8th with the amount of teams that are ahead of them still. So, you know, you just got one game to get to Europe. And to be fair, I probably would have taken that at the beginning of the season.
What we are trying to do is achieve something we haven't achieved before on both fronts, or haven't achieved for a while on both fronts. So try and get the biggest tally of points in the Premier League ever for Palace. We're 3 points away from that.
Oh, really? Is that all? Okay.
That's all. So one more win would sit us level on 49, which is our highest ever Premier League tally. We've never hit the 50 mark, although we have achieved higher than 12th, believe it or not.
You've finished 10th, haven't you?
Yeah. It just means that the teams above us seem to have done a bit better, which means that the lower league position. So that's a real aim.
Yeah.
And of course, our best route, as we knew, and we did say this when we talked about the podcast the other week about the best route to Europe. Yeah. And, you know, we were all having a conversation. And I do still think there's a real chance that Palace could finish above Brighton if we have our good finish. Mm. But our best chance for Europe was never going to be the league. We left it too late. The FA Cup is really our best chance. Unless, of course, some kind of miracle happens. Mathematically, it could still happen. It's not going to.
Yeah. Let's leave that there then, Andy. Thank you very much. Let's take a little break and we'll come back and have a little chat about everything else Premier League.
Welcome back, everybody. So let's have a little look at the rest of the results in the Premier League for last week. So, Neil, we're going to zip through these. Obviously, we do not give too much preference to any of these big clubs. So don't start talking about Man City or Arsenal. Right? I don't want to hear it.
All right.
Don't want to hear it. But first of all, we will cover that Man City-Wolves game. 1-0 Man City. Anything to say?
Wolves look pretty good, to be fair. They actually went at them. I mean, they've got nothing to lose. But Man City win again, starting to look quite good, coming into form. They've got a big match coming up, haven't they?
Yeah, don't worry about that. But Wolves' 6-game unbeaten run come to an end as well.
Mm. So, yeah, but it was a close one.
It was, actually, it was. They do look beatable, is what I got out of that game, though.
I agree.
They do. Aston Villa 1, Fulham 0.
Yeah, very even game. I mean, Fulham actually probably will feel unlucky. I think they created quite a few chances as well. Probably a draw would have been a fair result. Tielemans, the only goal, I think, very early in the game, about 13 minutes. It was one of those games that I felt could have gone either way. I'm pleased it went that way because it opens up the European spot a little bit more. We can talk about that later. But yeah, Villa 1-0. Not much else to say from my point of view. What about you?
Well, Villa's 7th win in 9, and Fulham have now lost 6 of their last 10.
Yeah, there's a bit of the old form. Off. Yeah, there's a bit of a problem there. I can talk about that actually in a minute.
A 2-2 draw between Everton and Ipswich. Everton won't be happy with that.
No, it was a strange one as well because obviously Everton went 2 up. A special mention to Julio Enciso with his annual rocket that he scores.
That was a great goal.
Yeah, it's, to be fair, most of my Brighton colleagues were all a little bit annoyed by it because it means now that he's going to take even more pot shots like he normally does, try to score from everywhere rather than pass it to someone. But, you know, it was a great goal. So good that the keeper even clapped.
There you go. Hang on. What's it? Am I reading this right? Leicester City 2, Southampton 0.
Yeah, Leicester actually win a game, but then you realise it was against Southampton. So does that even count?
Well, I've got 2 Leicester City fans in our house. So we're 2 Palace fans, 2 Leicester fans is how it works.
Okay.
Obviously, they're from Leicester way.
Finally, something to smile about then.
Well, yeah. I mean, they scored their first home goal since December the 8th. home goal.
Well, also, the good thing about that is that it was Jamie Vardy's, I think it was his 199th for Leicester. So he's only got one more goal to get 200 before he leaves Leicester, which I think, you know, most people will probably say, apart from maybe the Rooneys, that would be a good thing to see.
I mean, imagine being a Leicester City fan, season ticket holder, and you kind of, I don't know, woke up from hibernation to celebrate that goal.
Yeah.
I mean, you've been waiting since before Christmas for a goal. It's
and we think we're bad at our places. I know. Unbelievable, isn't it? The other thing to mention.
Go on, I know what you're going to say.
Do you see poor David Webb? Did you see what happened?
Wasn't that his first game as well?
It was his first game.
He got taken out by Jordan Ayew, didn't he?
Yeah, Jordan Ayew gave him the shoulder. Almost knocked him out onto the floor. And Vardy blows the whistle for the ref. And I just felt really sorry for him. First game for the, you know, welcome to the Premier League, ref. There you go.
And it was the fact that he's lying on the floor Vardy takes his whistle, and the ref doesn't even acknowledge the fact that it's happened, does it? He just kind of stays down. Oh, it's awful.
I hope he's all right, but yeah, there's something so funny, isn't there, about a referee getting hurt? It's horrible, but it's funny.
I know. He was all right, though. Yeah. He was all right. Yeah. And Southampton are now guaranteed to finish bottom for a record-breaking third time, which is bad. Still on 11 points.
Still need level one more.
I don't know why this has turned into a weekly feature now.
I love it.
Are they going to be the worst ever?
It'd be a shame when they're not here next season. Anyway.
Oh, there you go. Right, moving on. Arsenal 1, Bournemouth 2.
Yeah, this annoyed me, this game. I'll keep it short, but Arsenal didn't even try from my point of view.
Really?
It was a very strange game. Look, they got a goal ahead, right? So they went 1-0 up, and yep. I was thinking, okay, well, that's good. That'll suit me. I'll even take a point, if I'm honest, mm-hmm. at that moment, thinking from a Bournemouth perspective, I don't want Bournemouth winning for obvious reasons. But Arteta just didn't even make any subs at any point. When they went 2-1 down, he waited until right near the end of the game. It was clearly thinking about Paris. And I can I can understand it. It's just my own frustration that we're getting to the end of the season and certain games, the managers aren't really trying anymore because they've got other more important things on their mind. And I get it. It's just bad luck from that
point of
view.
They've got to be careful, though. They've got to be really careful. City are 3 points away from them now. And
Does anyone really care?
I think the Arsenal fans care that they'd be going backwards because you go second, third. I mean, shout out to Bournemouth, though. It's the first time they've ever got any points at the Emirates.
Really? Ever? They've never actually got anything?
Not at the Emirates.
Blimey. Okay, no. Well, in that case, fair play. But it did frustrate me. 3 points at Arsenal was not what I was expecting for Bournemouth. So that put me in a bad mood.
This will cheer you up, though.
Go on.
Brentford 4, Man United 3.
Thanks, Andy. Yeah.
Oh. Could my prediction of Brentford reaching Europe be coming true?
I think that's actually a good shout now, looking at it. I mean, I didn't want to believe it, first of all, but I'm starting to believe that
they've
now.
They've got the momentum.
They have.
And they've got the fixture list.
Well, that's the thing. You know, we talk about momentum. I was going to talk about it earlier, but, you know, you think about all those teams. Bournemouth, they're in good form, really. They've won 2 and drawn 3 in their last 5. Mm. Brentford, other way around, they've won 3 and drawn 2. So they're absolutely banging form. And then you mentioned it, Fulham, 2 wins, 3 losses in their last 5. And Brighton, 2 draws, only 1 win. So everyone right at this moment is starting to look a little bit dodgy apart from Brentford. Brentford,
and,
you know, literally win.
Didn't even mention because we're basically out of the race.
Well, I'd never mention Palace if I can help it. But
do you know what? They've got it going on at Brentford. They've got 3 players who have scored 10 goals or more. No other club has this.
Well, that's the thing. We're, in particular, Wisser and Wemo, which we seem to be talking about weekly, both of them are on 18 goals.
Mad.
So they're literally just away from 20 goals as well. It's not even just over 10. They're almost at 20, both of them. What a season.
Yeah, and they've scored 62 goals so far this season, only bettered by Liverpool, Man City, Newcastle and Arsenal.
Yeah.
So, and as I said, with Ipswich, Fulham, Wolves to come, my money's on them for Europe. But let's see how it plays out.
Totally understand it, mate. Totally understand it now, unfortunately.
And not a word to be said about Man United. Move on. West Ham 1, Tottenham 1.
I think both teams would be ecstatic with a point. I think both teams, if they could have managed it, they probably both would have lost. I mean, that's how bad they've been playing, both teams. So, do you think he'll be there next season, Potter?
I think Potter will be around for longer than Ange.
Well,
I know that doesn't answer your question.
No, I know what you mean. But that's fair.
I do think Potter. I think Potter will be given time. Yeah, I do. I think he's got to get himself a win too.
Yeah, fair point. Yeah. What was the last game?
Chelsea 3, Liverpool 1.
Oh, yeah. Liverpool getting their tans on the beach.
Do you know what you did? Fair play. You did say this. You did say that Liverpool will start to, yeah, to make some errors, and also that they're going to be handing out the caps so that they all get their medals. Yeah. And they did. They made 6 changes.
Yeah. Endo got his first start. Kwanzaa suddenly turned up. Yeah, exactly. I think.
And it didn't click, did it?
No, it didn't. And it looked like, I think the thing is that even in a game, a professional footballer, like all of us, we can all get annoyed and we can all try a bit harder when we want to. Mm. But ultimately, when push comes to shove, Chelsea needed the points. Liverpool didn't.
Right.
And that's what happened at the end of the game. You can see it. You know, Chelsea kept pushing. They got their third goal, game over. Next week, Liverpool have got Arsenal. Both teams don't really care that much. But I wonder if Liverpool might show up next week because it's Arsenal. I think that might happen. But we'll see. We'll see.
Well, Chelsea gave them the Guard of Honour, didn't they? The limited Guard of Honour. And they've also got Newcastle next, I believe. So that's the one that is going to be all to play for.
Yeah.
Chelsea-Newcastle, because I think they're now level on points.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the thing, isn't it? There's a few games in the last few fixtures here or there between different teams that you're thinking that's going to make the absolute decision one way or the other. It's
funny, isn't it? How we're all so focused on these European places, which, yeah, it's news and all that, and it's important. But because Liverpool ran away with the league and the bottom of the table's been so dull, this is all we've really got to talk about.
Yeah.
But absolutely. There we go.
Well, look, let's just run through that, actually. Those predictions that we talked about before and who's going to finish where in that middle table and the European spot, where it currently leaves us at the moment is... Eighth position is Bournemouth on 53 points. Ninth position is Brentford, to your point, Andy, 52 points. But also on 52 points is Brighton, just under them. There's a 8-goal swing needed there to change that situation. 11th is Fulham, 51 points. And then let me just get down to 12th somewhere. 12th is, oh, let me just check... Oh, Palace, 12th.
Yeah.
It never gets old, mate.
Yeah. And if we look at our prediction tables, right, so we take what we think are going to be the results that we said
a
few weeks back.
Do we have to? I'm pretty sure I got loads wrong this week.
Well, I've kept that league table going.
Have
so
you?
It's okay. Quite difficult to explain it, but if you can imagine, we've put our predictions in for them, was it five games, I think?
Five games.
And we've done our own little league table based, like 2 weeks ago, based on them five games. So then now as the results are coming in, I've updated the league table.
Oh, right? Look at you little stato.
Yeah. But obviously we've got two different league tables going on. You've got your one based on what your last three predictions are going to be.
Yeah.
And I've got my one. So based on your predictions, quite predictably, you still somehow think Brighton are going to end up at the top of that little table. Because you think you're now going to get... 9 points from the last three games.
Yeah.
I do not.
It can happen. I promise you, it can happen.
So you've got Brighton finishing in eighth, and then Fulham, Bournemouth and Brentford would actually all be on the same points.
Right. Okay.
And then Palace on 55.
And what position would Palace be in at that moment?
12th.
Oh, I thought so.
More realistically, I believe, and more impartially, actually, do not have Palace... sat at the top of that and never did because I think we're going to win the FA Cup. I've got Brentford at the top on 61 points, and then I've got Bournemouth in ninth on 56 points, Palace in 10th on 55, Fulham and Brighton joint at the bottom on 54 because I think your season's going to fall to bits now. And I'm not saying I want it to. I might do. I'm not saying I want it to, but I think it will. Everything's telling me it's going to.
Listeners, I can see his face. He does want it to fall apart.
I want Palace to finish above Brighton. That is all I really want. No, actually, I want us to win the FA Cup.
I was going to say, surely there's something else more important this season.
For this pod, I want... I want Palace because you've been quite smug about it.
Oh, let's roll on.
Yeah. But there we go. Let's see what happens. I think last week, Neil, you got three out of your five predictions correct. Mm-hmm. I got two out of the five.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, you're still in the lead so far. You're one ahead of me on the prediction state. But we're not too far off from the truth, which is good.
Right. That was the roundup of the Premier League this week. What else are we going to do next, Andy?
I think it's time for a feature.
VAR.
Who are you?
It's now time for VAR, the Very Anonymous Recruit, the podcast game where we scout out a mystery footballer hiding in plain sight. Each week we take it in turns to guess a mystery footballer from our club using given clues. And this week... We've had a bit of a gap because we've had double game weeks, haven't we, Neil?
Absolutely.
But this week, it's now Neil's turn.
Okay, cool.
How do you feel about this, Neil?
I'm up for it. It was worth a try. I mean, I think I know the squad pretty well, but who knows? I mean, if you come up with some obscure reference like the ones that I came up with you for last time, then I could be here all night.
Well, look, for the listeners, obviously, who haven't listened for the last couple of weeks, because we've had double game weeks, we haven't done it. I'll explain the rules.
Go on.
You've got five clues about a current player at the moment, a current player in the squad. And clue one is going to be a tricky one for the real footballing tacticians.
Yep.
Do you class yourself as a footballing tactician?
I try my hardest.
Clue two is still a bit cagey, but it's kind of a little bit of an easier one. Clue three is a clever through ball. Now you're seeing the shape and it's a bit easier. Clue four is like one-on-one. You get it right and you're in.
Yeah.
And clue five is basically a tap-in at the far post. Although being a Brighton fan, you'll know that's not quite as easy as it would be. So if you're still guessing by that point, there is no hope and I'm just going to give you the answer.
Come on then, let's just do it.
Let's play VAR. Clue number one.
Oh.
This player... Can you feel the intensity?
I did suddenly felt like I was on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire or something there.
Thank you. This player, born on the 21st of November 2000 in London, joined the Fulham Academy at the age of 8.
2000, so he's around.
Could be anyone, mate.
24. Could be anyone. Well, no, it'll be a Brighton player in the Brighton squad.
Yeah.
Fulham. Okay, so he's got to be Londonish boy, maybe? Or it could be anyone, though, couldn't it? Tarek Lamptey. No, it's not him, is it? Because I think he joined Chelsea. Tarek Lamptey.
No. Clue number two. He was an England youth international, but received his first senior international cap with another nation in 2023.
Oh. Well, that, again, could have been Tarek Lamptey. Anyway, stop talking about Tarek Lamptey, Neil. 2023, another nation.
Going to move on, Neil.
England.
I'm going to move on, mate. You're
boring
me.
Yeah, go on then.
Clue number three. On the 6th of September 2022, he made his UEFA Champions League debut with a 3-0 home defeat at Real Madrid.
What?
Clearly not with Brighton.
All right. 2023 Champions League. So who was playing Champions League? Oh, hang on. Champions League, Celtic. Was it Matt O'Reilly?
Yeah, it was.
Oh,
yeah. Well done, mate. Yeah, the other clues were this player... made his Premier League debut for Brighton in 2024 November, scoring the winning goal against Man City, which I'm sure you remember that one.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, of course, the stupid clue at the end.
First name Matt, second name...
Well, it's central midfielder known for his time at Celtic, joined Brighton in 2024 and has represented Denmark. There you go. Well done, Neil.
Thanks, mate.
You did better than I did, actually, I think.
Well, who's keeping score? Oh, I am, yeah.
Let's see what happens next week on that one.
Thanks, mate. That was VAR.
Oh, yes!
Welcome back. This is Seagull Eagle. So, Andy, just before we finish off, let's do our winging it session. Let's talk about the games coming up. So,
Should we start with yours?
Yeah, sure.
You've got Wolves on the 10th of May.
Yes, I have Wolves on the 10th of May.
How do you see this going?
Well... it's away, and that usually means that we tend to play a little better away from home because teams don't just shut up shop against us. So hopefully it might be a bit more of an open game. Wolves, as we know, are, you know, okay, yes, they played Man City this weekend and lost, but actually before that, they've been fantastic, haven't they?
They only just lost as well.
Well, yeah.
5 out of 6 wins, remember, mate.
Yeah,
I'm scared for you.
If I'm honest, looking back, when I looked at my predictions, you're quite rightly, as you pointed out a few minutes ago, I suggested that we're going to win this game.
Mm.
I'm less confident now. However, what I would say is, if anything, the game against Newcastle has made me a little bit more positive about the concept that we may not concede so many goals.
Okay.
If we have the same attitude as we did on Sunday of going to Wolves, then I think it could be a lot closer. And look, realistically, Wolves have got nothing to play for, but they're not showing that. They're just playing because they're enjoying it and they're doing really well. Brighton have to get something from this game. They probably have to win, realistically, to stand a chance of finishing in that eighth position. So, you know, we come into the last three games of the season. We've got to win all of them, from my point of view.
I think you're right, Neil. I think if you don't win this game, I think you're with us now in terms of the what could have been in the league for Europe. And, the form table doesn't look great for you. 5 out of 6 wins for Wolves, 1 out of 6 for Brighton. So the stats would say it ain't going to be great. I'd predicted a few weeks back a 1-1 draw. I'm changing it.
Oh, really? Here we go. Brace yourself.
No, I think you could probably work out where I'm going. I think it's going to be a 2-1 loss. I don't think you're going to get walloped. I can't see you winning it. I just think that Wolves have got a bit of momentum at the moment. So
yeah. I totally understand what you're saying, and I'm not confident. Mm. I'm going to stay strong, and I'm going to say that we're going to sneak it.
Okay.
I think we're going to sneak it 2-1. I think we're going to score early. They're going to come back at us, and then we're going to get lucky near the end of the game. I'm going to try for that. And as I say, if they use the same mental strength that they had against Newcastle and they work as a team as they did, then I think it's going to be a lot closer than maybe the form table suggests.
And do you know what? I think you've hit the nail on the head there, which is out of them two teams, who's actually got something to play for? And it's whether Wolves can convince themselves they have.
Yeah, true, true.
That's the thing, isn't it? Yeah. So if it's 2-1, one of us will be correct. Let's find out who next week.
Palace Spurs. Where is it? It's at Spurs, isn't it?
It's at Spurs. Yeah, it's on Sunday kickoff. Oh, well, I kind of alluded to it earlier, didn't I? I'm hoping that Tottenham are going to be distracted by the Europa League semi-final, right? Which, yeah, I think's on the Thursday.
It's on this Thursday.
This Thursday, and obviously the game's on the Sunday. So I'm hoping that they might field a weaker team as they did against West Ham, be a bit distracted and just potentially feeling the pressure. I don't know. I've got Palace winning 2-1 here.
So let's just be clear for a second. You've got Spurs on Sunday, and then is your next game the FA Cup final?
The following Saturday, yeah.
So that's another thing to consider, isn't it? You know, is your manager going to change the team a little bit and save certain people's legs?
No. I think that there might be an element of half a game here or there, like right, he did last time for the semi-final, but he's very much come out publicly and said, we're playing for momentum, we're trying to set 2 records. Do you know what I mean? We're trying to win the FA Cup, we're trying to get our biggest points tally. And he's not going to let his foot off the gas in the league. He wants to go into that final with momentum.
Well, in that case then, I can't see any other result but a Palace win from that point of view. Spurs are awful.
Mm.
The only games they're getting up for are those Europa League. If they, put it this way, if they win on Thursday, Spurs, and they go through to the final, they're definitely not going to be playing well on Sunday. They won't give a, won't give a damn about the game. If they lose on Thursday and they go out...
Do you reckon Andrew still be there?
No, I don't. He might actually still be there, but I think even more of a problem will be the fact that literally the whole season's gone and they're then sitting in 17th, 18th, possibly, you know. I just don't see any way in which any scenario where Spurs will want to try and get up for that game against Palace. So I think you've got it in the bag already.
Mm. I mean, I think we know that Wharton's potentially going to be out.
Sure.
With his twisted ankle, bless him. And apart from that, though, we haven't really... I don't want to curse it, but we're doing all right with injuries at the moment. Yeah, we've still got some of the ones that have been out for the whole season or whatever, but we've got some of the kids that are looking good and sharp, and
It's going to be a lot of players wanting to get fit for next weekend, isn't it?
So. Yeah, everyone's going to want to be playing, and it's really frustrating, actually, because we have still got things to play for and records to hit.
Yeah.
So it's not really the time to start bringing on the likes of France and... SA, who I'm really looking forward to seeing. And they are watching them warm up last night, actually, showboating, like, you know, the ball sticking to their feet. And everyone's like, wow. I really want to see them get their chance and do something special. But I think that might be next season now.
Look, if there's ever a team that you're going to see those players against, it's going to be Spurs. I mean, you know, Spurs are awful. So we'll have to wait and see.
Let's get a couple up and then bring them on. That'd be good.
So let's just be clear then. So I think Palace will win against Spurs. What are you actually predicting?
2-1.
2-1 to Palace. You think they'll win as well?
I think they'll win 2-1. Either 2-1 or 3-1. I'm going reserve 2-1. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I reckon 3-0 to Palace.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, I think...
That's really kind of you, Neil. I just want to publicly say thank you for showing your public trust of the Eagles.
Oh, no, it's not trust in the Eagles. It's the fact that Spurs are that bad. Right then, so that was winging it. That's our predictions for the week. Andy, do you want to see us out?
That's a wrap for episode 5 of Seagull Eagle podcast. Somehow still flying despite all the turbulence. Make sure you hit the subscribe button, because that is the only sensible thing to do, isn't it, Neil? To be honest with you, don't be the one that misses out. We're all over TikTok, Facebook, Instagram and X, so search for Seagull Eagle and you'll find us. If you've got beef, banter or a better opinion than ours, email us on seagulleaglepodcast@gmail.com. We'll be back soon for more nonsense, football takes and emotional instability. See you next week. Until then, up the Eagles!
Eagles!